Mr. Lund in Reel 36. So...
So he said, well, he said that. He said, well, I'm down, he said. And he was talking to himself, he said. He's looking at his book and he's talking to himself. And I said, is that all you want? So he said, yes, that's all right. And off I went. And, but you see, that just answers the question, doesn't it?
So basically George Gates wasn't able to put this together?
Not really.
So did he have any, when he was RSM, did he have anybody helping him to...
Yeah.
Who would that be, do you think?
He would have had somebody helping him, yeah. Not me, but somebody, he would have had somebody helping him.
Now, as we've talked about your time in Vienna, there seems to have been quite a few of the NCOs that had gone through the entire history of the battalion from 1940 through to this period. About how many do you think there were altogether?
Well, there weren't many of us left then. There weren't that many left. It's a bit difficult. I mean, in D Company alone, well, Johnny Lucas would be one. Jimmy Dyer, myself. Now all the rest of them, even Tommy Page was at one time and came to us as a reinforcement. All the rest of them came at some time or other as reinforcement. There wasn't any more.
Was Arthur Pearson still with you at this time?
No, Arthur Pearson had gone and taken a commission somewhere. I know he came back. He took the commission and came back. But he'd gone and taken the commission and he was serving somewhere else.
He'd been posted somewhere else by this stage. Yeah. We've talked about RSM Thomason and his, you know, soldierly style. Other veterans have talked about Arthur Pearson in similar terms. Did they strike you as the same kind of?
Not really. Well, yes, in a way, Pearson had some of Thomason's qualities. I quite agree that he did. Unfortunately, not all of them. Pearson was lacking in. He wasn't. Thomason always gave everybody a fair chance. Let's put it that way. No matter how bad they are, he gave them a fair chance. But if you got on the wrong side of Pearson, you remained on the wrong side of Pearson, and that was your hard luck. I think that answers the question that you're asking. That was the difference between them.
And did you ever get on the wrong side of Pearson?
I never had enough to do with him, really.
And
so, how did you hear about the battalion disbanding? How did it come through the news?
We were coming back from Vienna, and we came back from Vienna, but there wasn't any rumours then. The main conversation room, or what you call it, at that time was either the Overland League or the Demont. But nobody, we never seemed to hear anything about it. Well, I don't recall that we were, that came out all of a sudden.
And how did it come out?
Well, when we got back from Vienna, see, you have to remember, so far as I'm concerned, when we left Vienna, I was then standing in for Tommy Page, the colour sergeant for the company. So I had my, I had to, other sort of things to think about. and I wasn't able to keep up. It's a bit of a job, you know. If I'd have been more mixed in with the company, which I wasn't much then, because that sort of gave me a different sort of life altogether for the next, well, for as long as Tommy Place was away, 6 weeks and 2 months. So I didn't, personally, I didn't hear anything about the battalion breaking up until we got back from Vienna. Then, of course, you see, we went back to our original billets, and the companies were all dispersed, like I told you, and this gradually began to come out. But we never used to. The first I got to hear about it was when it came out on battalion orders that George Case was going to be RSM, and he'd been promoted to RSM, and that's what started to make me think, because I couldn't see that as a long term appointment, not in any way at all. And I'm not knocking George Gates personally, really, but I just don't think it would have been. And well, I know it wouldn't have been. Anyway, that was the first thing that made me think about it. And then I began to hear one or two rumours down that I used to spend quite a lot of time at the QM stores then, because doing Tommy Page's job. And I picked it up from there. In fact, I used to get a lot of information from down there. Old Fruity Curran used to get it all. But I used to, you know, that's what kept me in touch with it. And that's when I got to know about that. But he must have been one of the first ones away through the time, I reckon. Anyway.
So he was still there in 1945?
He was, yeah. He must have been one of the first away on Mindy Mob. Because, you see, he was a Beds and Hearts man. He was a... they were same as Broadheads, you see. It was George Broadhead, and they were all reservists, so all kind of got recalled back. So his service would have gone right back until the beginning of the war. So it was pretty obvious that he was going to be in a very early number, you know, in the very early 20s or even 19, possibly, something like that. So I didn't give Brutley Curran much more time there. But he kept me well informed while he was there. But anyway, that's where I got it from. And I was going there every day, you see, for the rations and this and that. So that was quite informative, and quite apart from people like Ken Cove and Peter Griffin knew about it. But it wasn't talked about much in the company, not in our company. In fact, I was a bit surprised about that. And for that reason, really, I never used to say very much about it.
What was the general feeling about the fact that you were going to be disbanded, though? Were people disappointed?
Well, you see, the ones who didn't mind were not so much blokes like old Prudy Curran, but the 22s and 24s, you know, the older ones, and even Vic Walker, he was a little bit older than me, so he would have been a younger one. I was 28, so Vic would have been about 25 or 26, and they were the ones who, they would more or less talk about it more than anybody, because they were, their future hadn't been decided, not really, because there weren't so many of them. There were more of us 28 and over, a lot more. I mean, I suppose you could almost say two-thirds of what was left.
So the men with the higher numbers, you would have preferred to see out your service in the 16th Battalion, is that what you're saying?
No, I don't mean it that way. I mean, according to rumour, you know, the 2nd Battalion, was it? Was the 2nd Battalion we went to, wasn't it?
Oh, the 1st, I think you wrote on your phone.
Yeah, 1st. That's right. Well, according to rumour, our future, we knew what our future was. I didn't worry about that, because I knew what mine was, and there weren't that many 28 groups that went with us. The majority of them would have been in the 30s or even 40s and even beyond that. So they had plenty of time in front of them, and they knew that they were going to the 1st Battalion, and they knew they were going back to Greece, and so they did, you know, that was it. They didn't need to know anymore. So they were even able to, I suppose, if they'd have been allowed, whether it had been okay, they could almost write and tell anybody about it at home or something like that. And the war was over, so they weren't going to do any damage. So I don't know, they might have done that. But they didn't, at least they knew. But see, now these others, you see that they weren't really that many. So you've got to keep all the older ones, you see. Even people like George Gates, you see. I mean, he didn't know. He probably didn't know what the future held for him, really. He must have been one of the early ones, because there again, you see, he would have been recalled with the outbreak of war. He was a reservist, and he would have been recalled the same as Broadhead and the rest of them. So they knew that they didn't have much longer to go. And they also knew that once the bulk of us had gone off to Greece, then there weren't really very many left to worry about. Which there wasn't, not all that many.
Was there any thought, either, you know, yourself or any of your friends, about staying in the army as a regular?
Well, I don't know.
Did you ever consider it?
Oh, I never considered it. No.
Why
no,
not?
I never considered it. It wasn't that I disliked it. It wasn't because I disliked it, like, in that way. But I couldn't see myself, you know. I never thought about that. And I used to think that I was quite happy in the fact that I knew that my number was relatively low. I wasn't going to see much being Greece very long. I knew that. And I'd had 28 days overland leave. And so, you know, it was only a matter of months, really. So it didn't bother me.
So you were posted to the 1st Battalion. The 16th Battalion was still there when you left? There was still some of it.
Well, it was left, yeah.
So it was still functioning as you were posted away?
Well, more or less functioning as far as it could. Yes, oh yeah. But then you see, when we went, as I say, when we went to Greece, I can't really quote figures, but on a rough guess, I would say that, just using figures, if the battalion had been more or less up to strength, I would say that we were a good two-thirds of the battalion, what was left of it, would have been going to Greece. So in other words, you had an awful lot, don't forget, you had quite a lot of young soldiers there. People who joined us from Young Soldiers Challenge, that sort of thing. So, I would say two-thirds.
Did you mark your last night with the 16th in any way? Did you do anything, go out?
No, I don't remember that we did. No, I don't think there was. There wasn't anything. I know, when we got back from Vienna, we ran into a little bit of whiskey green Austria there, and we were back in our old village. But then we had a little spell of snow. And I reckon that was about the last time I should think that we played that officers and sergeants football match.
Could you describe that?
I should think that would have been in. That must have been a bit of that. I know we came back never to be out at this period of time when we had a bit of snow.
And you had a story about that football match you told us off the tape. Could you describe it?
Oh, that did. Yeah, well, poor old Dodsy, yeah. He was playing. Yeah,
who was Dodsy?
He was a lieutenant now, I think. When I first met him, he was second lieutenant. He was a lieutenant now, I think. I believe he was a mortar officer. I don't know, because I've been away from headquarters company, so I think he was a mortar officer then. I think so.
And what happened?
During the course of the match. We won the match. We played this game. Thomason wanted to play it, and the only thing that was going to stop us was the fact that it had been snowing. And we had quite a bit of snow. Anyway, I did play it. It was a bit of a farce, really, because, you know, we shouldn't have done really what we did. And Thomason knew that there wasn't going to be another one. And that was the first chance that he had to put it on. He'd already arranged that. But you see, Thomason himself, you have to remember that Thomason himself wouldn't have been there then, because Thomason left us for Vienna.
So he arranged the football match, but he wasn't there.
That had been arranged, previously.
So what happened in the game then? You won the game?
Oh, we won the game, yeah, we won the game. And we had a fair old game. And then I know that old Dodsy had there was a bloke called Mac Vicker. I remember him, he was a goalkeeper, Mac Vicker, he was an officer. I think he wasn't a captain, I think he was a lieutenant. Even if Mac Vicker was a goalkeeper, he was a good goalkeeper, but he could play. Oh yeah, because he played in the battalion team. And this Dodds was the best in the front line, and he was playing an inside forward, Dodds. We had Peter Griffin, Joe Kellett, I knew all the outs in them, but they're all.
Who played in goal?
Vic Walker was our goalkeeper, yeah.
And you said off the tape that you did a bit of a tackle into him.
Oh yeah, that was you could dodge it, yeah. Yeah, well, it was quite simple, really easy done, because he went to take a terrific swipe at his ball, and I sort of went into two-footed, you see, and with the result that I got the ball trapped between his feet like that, and he was trying to kick this ball. Of course, he couldn't move it, so as a result of that, his ankle went. He really went.
So he broke his ankle.
Well, I didn't break it, but
he hurt
him. you know, that was just, I'm afraid that was just the last part he played, and he was laid up for some time because of that. But he was a decent player, he's not gods. Yeah.
Were there any other officers that stood out on the football team?
No, I remember particularly that goalkeeper. Can't remember. I had an idea of that Gift Footer was in it.
Who did you use?
Ronnie Elliott, he was in it. Ronnie Elliott was playing. He got released. He went out on Class B release, Ronnie Elliott. But he was playing in that match. He was only young chap. Fairly young. Younger than Dodds. Well, they had one or two there. Yeah.
Can you remember what the score was?
I don't know. It was pretty one-sided. It was pretty one-sided, but as I say, it shouldn't really have been played, but Tom, you know, it was just that it's been arranged for so long, and I think it was arranged before we even went to Vienna, personally. Thomason probably did that before we went to Vienna, you see. It was that when Thomason left us when we were in Vienna. We never saw him anymore.
Who would you use as a referee in a game like that? Oh, officers and sergeants.
What he used to do, in previous matches, we had he used to try and get somebody from the Army Physical Training Corps. There used to be those units, they used to be dotted around, you know, they used to be attached to various battalions, you know what I mean. And the Army Physical Training Corps. And we did it one time, when we were at Rye, we had a sergeant and two lance corporals. Two corporals, from the APTC, that is it, the Armed Physical Training Corps, isn't it? And we had them when we were at Rye, but we never had them abroad. But Thomason used to try and get somebody from there to referee the match. You could always get someone one of them, somebody had one. That was our problem.
So, while you were still in Austria, people were starting to get demobbed and you were leaving the battalion at this stage.
Some of the early groups went off. Yes, 20, 22, up to 22, 23. But you see, they were few and far between. There weren't very many of them. See, they had, you've got to incorporate the age, that is to say, their personal age. And so for that reason, you never really got very many of them together. So, no, they were a few, I would say a few and far between.
So a large number of soldiers were transferred to the 1st Battalion. How did you actually get there? How did you get down the base?
Well, what happened there was that, you see, we were in the Wilden, the Villac, and that area, and Battalion headquarters, QM stores, all the transport. The companies were dispersed. We couldn't do anything about that. What happened was that officially came out on Battalion orders about what was going to happen. And they sent out a special thing about it, but it wasn't anything more than we already knew most of what was on there. We didn't know the details of how we were going to get there. Anyway, it did tell us that. So what we did was that they got us to onto the train. Got us onto the train. I think we went, more or less went from the build an area. I'm only talking about the battalion now. We went to from there, and we went on the train. We went all the way back. Cool. We went all the way down, right the way down through Italy to now. I sent us to a tremendous transit camp area in Taranto. And Taranto was more or less the area that they used. If you remember, Montgomery took two divisions over from Sicily, right? They went into, on the, as they called it then, the Tower of Italy. Right. But Taranto was in that area. And there was a tremendous, great big transit camp there. And also, they had a big, had its own Taranto Bay, of course you could get a troop ship in there, which was very useful. So that's where we went to, Taranto. And when we got to Taranto, we were met. We were met by some people from the 1st Battalion, and we were taken to this, had to go to this transit camp there, and they attempted to. Well, I didn't try to sort us out. They just gave us somewhere, give us somewhere to live and that sort of thing, and tents and whatever. Well, it was tents, yeah. And we, until such times as they were ready for the next move, which, because we got the boat there, we got on the boat there, Taranto, and that boat, that was a trip, yeah, that was the smallest one. It wasn't only us, it was the Foresters and the Leicesters. They had similar groups to us.
Those were the other battalions in the brigade.
That's right. Those were the other two. So they were concerned with that, really with us. So therefore, it was a reasonably decent sized troop ship. We got on troop ship there, that's Taranto, and we went from there to Sri Lanka. And we hadn't been to Sri Lanka before. We hadn't been to Sri Lanka before. Maybe the Lesser or Forrester had, but we didn't. Anyway, that's where we went to. We got off the troop ship at Sri Lanka, and we were met there by the 1st Battalion people. And we were put on to, they had a whole line of trucks there. They had the same sort of things that we used for the overland leave, the ones we could put benches in the back. We had that. And they took us from there, from Salonika, to, well, I can't tell you the name of the place because to be quite honest, I never really did find it out, but it was only a small town. I should say it was about 20, 25, maybe 30 miles away from Sri Lanka, and this place was it was in the north. We were going north, heading towards Albania all the time. But before we got to the Albanian border, this place came up. I can't think of the name of it. But that's where we went to, there, where we were taken there.